Welcome to Does the Team Think? With Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, Cardi Robinson, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And team, listen now for a question coming to you from Mrs. Mary Bradshaw. Hello, Mrs. Bradshaw. Your question, please.
If the members of the team could go back into history, even further than they go back now, what clothes and hairstyle of the past would they think best suited to them?
If members of the team could go back into history, even further back than they do now, what clothes and hairstyle of the past would they think best suited them?
I take umbrage at this question, madam.
I take umbrage. I've got a bad chest.
Well, you're taking it internally. It's supposed to be rubbed off.
Oh, I see. I'll be fine.
But I do take umbrage because there's an implied insult here, Mrs.
Bradshaw.
Cook. Oh, Bradshaw. I mean, I do object to this little, in parenthesis here, you say even further back than they do now. This is a snide remark about our jokes, isn't it, madam?
No.
You've got to... What?
Not what? About your jokes, Jim, about your looks.
Well, it's even snider, then. It's even nastier. I resent you, madam. Leave the platform.
No.
Now that she's still here, I will
thank
must
you,
ask
Mrs.
the
Rachel.
Question. I actually do fancy myself.
Oh, yeah. 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 And he's the only person who does, I'll tell you that.
As a matter of fact, they're living together.
Both of us. I fancy myself, I shouldn't have paused there. I fancy myself in white tights.
Oh, you filthy beast.
No, you don't. The period where they used to wear, well, in like pantomime tights, you know.
Yeah.
Keep you very snug and warm. White tights with long pants, fur below the knee. Fur below.
Fur below the knee.
Fur below.
That's a joke! Fur below the knee and a wimple.
I've always liked myself in my Eton suit. When I was a choir boy, I used to wear an Eton suit, a bum freezer, you
oh,
know.
Oh, nasty word.
And I used to have a hairdo. I had uncontrollable hair as a choir boy, and the choir master was always going for me. He said, why don't you brush your hair? I said, I do brush it, sir, but it comes back. I was in a fringe there. Fiery red it was, most attractive. And one of the other choir boys said to me, well, what you want to do, there was a product on the market then called Anzora cream. I don't know whether it still goes. He said, but it was very expensive. He said, you can make your own. Go to the chemist, get 2 ounces of gum tragacanth. Gum tragacanth, I remember the
he
word even now.
Up.
Because Disraeli laughed when I told him this. And put a little of your mother's perfume in it, and it's just as good. So I went and got this gum tragacanth with the perfume in. I put it on my hair, parted my hair, and it stayed solid for 3 months. It was like chiseled marble.
Yeah. Mrs. Bradshaw, I think you should have a turn now. How do you fancy these gentlemen? How would you like to see them?
Well, I know that Jimmy Edwards is very fond of horses.
Yes.
So I thought that he would be a lovely cavalier.
Oh, darling, yes, of course. But I've only got to go with mares.
And Arthur Askey, I thought, would be a lovely Roman centurion.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's
lovely.
That's
burning his Roman candle at both ends.
What about Cardi Robinson?
Well, I thought that Cardi Robinson would be a lovely caveman.
Oh. You've heard about me, have you?
What, dragging his woman behind him by the roots of her hair and all that?
And?
And Cyril Fletcher, a monk.
A monk?
A monk.
Well, I'd like to know, Mrs. Bradshaw, what you know about my habits.
Filthy.
As a matter of fact, you know this costume that has a sort of a ruff? You know, you look as if your head's been shoved up through a doily.
No, you mean a pierrot.
Yeah, well, yes, but you see, that would be useful for me because then all the muck off and drips off of the moustache wouldn't go on my knees like they do now. Onto my waistcoat.
He wants a gravy catcher.
That's right, that's right. And you could have a really wide one and never see your feet.
Well, you never see him in any case.
I know that.
Thank you, team, and thank you, Mrs. Bradshaw. Thank you very much.
We're finished. Good night, all.
And now, team, you're going to hear a question from Mr. Ted Inglis. Hello, Mr. Inglis. Question, please.
Would any member of the team swap his career for that of a customs officer?
Would any member of the team swap his career for that of a customs officer?
I have nothing to declare.
Are you a customs officer, then?
I was.
You were, were you? And now you've bettered yourself.
Yeah. Are you one of our quaint old British customs?
Not quite. Not yet.
I'd like to ask this gentleman, Mr. Lovelace.
Mr. Inglis.
Inglis. I knew it was something like Lovelace. Mr. Inglis, do you work on percentage?
Only when a seizure is obtained. And
a
then
seizure?
Yes. Don't tell me every time you go to the customs you have to have a seizure.
That's a stroke of luck.
How does a customs officer get on his honeymoon, though? Does he say to his bride, I'm going to go through your bags now. Have you anything to declare?
Listen, he was about to say something much more interesting than that.
No, he was.
If we're not careful, he'll come over and frisk the panel.
Do you get a percentage of what you take?
If an officer makes a seizure, that is, detects any of you pseudo-contrabandists, then he gets a percentage of the value of the goods that are seized.
That's why they're so keen.
That's it.
Now it's all revealed.
No, I never knew that.
Why they go rummaging through my dirty socks and everything.
Listen, the last time he came back from France, he had so much booze inside him, he had to pay import duty on you.
What is inside you? I think I'm right in saying, Mr. Catchpenny, Mr.
Inglis.
Mr. Inglis.
Mr. Turpin.
Once the booze is inside you, you don't have to pay for it, do you?
We have means of detecting what
I know. Plastic bag.
No, not means of detecting how much booze is inside me, physically.
I would think it would be impossible to detect how much booze was inside you.
I should think it'd be obvious. Well,
I'm delighted to hear it.
Only last week they tested Jim's alcohol for blood.
Do you get, Mr.
Inglis?
Do you get a special training in sort of judging character and facial expression, one thing or another? Because you're looking at us, you're scrutinising us as we shuffle miserably through through this awful affair that you deal. Do you get a special training?
This is more theory than fact. But there are means if you sweat under the nostrils, and you should.
He does, that's why he grew that.
Who's going to know?
Well, that's a pretty sure sign that you're one of them.
So that's
what do you mean he's one of them? But I can tell
you. I don't sweat, I perspire. I'm a gentleman.
I don't only sweat under the nostrils, as a matter of fact, it's practically everywhere.
Can I move my seat?
No, you don't know, one of the difficult things is when you're taking a car abroad, you're allowed to do that.
When you're taking abroad away in a car, it's worse.
And there was this fellow who came back from wherever it was. And the customs officer, like our good friend here, his name eludes me, he opened the boot. He said, have you got anything to declare? He said, no, which is the honest answer. And he opened the boot of the car, and inside there was two loaves of bread with an elephant in the middle of them. So he said, what do you mean you've got nothing to declare? He says, there's two loaves of bread with an elephant in the middle of them. And the man said, well, what I have in my sandwiches is my affair.
Well, no, Mr. Eludes Me. Is that what you said his name was?
Yeah,
Eludes
Mr. Eludes Me.
One of the craftiest smuggling devices I ever heard was based on absolute truth, and this is absolutely a true story.
Which is obviously going to be a lie.
No,
not when you put it like that.
As sure as I'm riding this bike, there was an Irish priest, and he used to smuggle watches and things over the border by the simple expedient of telling the truth. He used to go up and he used to say, what have you got, Father? And he said, I've got 5 watches, 6 diamond rings, some cocaine, and anything you'd like to mention. They said, get along with your father. You're only kidding. And he wasn't. And he hadn't told a lie, you see.
Mr. Inglis, just very briefly, which of these 4 gentlemen would you consider to be the most honest and truthful if you were faced him across a customs counter?
Not one of them.
Thank you, Mr. Inglis. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Get off! Rubbish! To hell with customs officers.
And now, team, you hear a question from Mrs. Catherine Topham.
What is the team's favourite remedy for boredom?
What is the team's favourite remedy for boredom?
Madam, you've touched on something very close to me here.
Oh, has she?
Drink is the answer, of course. One's got to face this fact that if you are bored, there's nothing better than opening a bottle of bubbly, darling, and all the world seems rosier. Don't you think?
What?
Cyril Fletcher.
Well, I think that one of the What was the question? I was...
What's your remedy for boredom?
Well, I was dozing off at the time.
We're going to be boring you, weren't we?
Yes, that's right.
All right, Cardi Robinson.
Question three.
I believe...
Cardi Robinson.
I'm very lucky, because I live in London, and I believe with Dr. Johnson, he who is tired of London is tired of life. And I'm not tired of London, I'm not tired of London. I'm never bored, really.
Is London tired of you?
Obviously.
Some people say that cricket is very boring. I like to watch cricket. And Lord Mancroft once said, in a very bright moment, he said that the British people are not very spiritual, he said, so they invented cricket to give them an idea of eternity.
Mrs. Bottom, is it Bottom?
Topham,
sorry. Did you hear the story of the two pigs talking, the
You're
two lady
hear it
pigs?
Now.
And one says, you know Matilda, that lovely little pig down the road, she's got married.
Speak up.
And she's had six litters... with six pigs in each litter, and the other lady pig said, oh, my dear, what a bore.
Mrs. Topham.
Don't clap rubbish.
No, rubbish, that's
don't
rubbish.
Clap rubbish.
Just throw money.
Mrs. Topham, what is your cure for boredom?
Well, I don't like to admit it, but I've got several.
Well, give us some of them.
Well,
keep it clean, though, please.
Very clean, yes, very clean.
No, be broad-minded.
Well, one of them, you see, is that I secretly bite cheese.
Oh, see, you devil.
I do, yes.
What for? Boredom?
Yes,
you
yes,
buy cheese
yes.
for boredom?
You see, I've been a slimmer, you see, and
oh,
I can't
I
have anything else. You
You're
see,
jolly lucky that the things that bore cheese don't bite you.
Yes.
Nice. I like that, so.
And then if I'm bored, I also sort out my drawers.
And any time I get bored, can I come and help you?
Anytime.
Oh, you made it. You made a bloomer there.
Yes. Oh,
she's got her knickers in a twist.
Dear, oh, dear.
And what else? Go on, this is doing
well. And then if I'm sort of, it's a nice day and there's been a good wind, then I go and have a jolly good bonfire in the garden. That's another one.
What, with your drawers?
No!
I think in present day terms, a lot of people are bored because they sit on their bottoms and watch television.
Top, what
online.
Else can you sit on?
They
it's Topham, not Bottom.
They just sit and watch telly all night and they get bored. And I don't wonder with most of the pro, because Jim and I are not in series at the moment, are we, Jim? No, but there you go. And for 90 new pence, they could come and see me performing in the flesh. I'm talking about performing in the flesh. Shortly, I'm going into Old Calcutta, you know that. I've only got a small part, but I'm going to be very good.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Mrs. Catherine Topham. And now it is time to meet our special guest, one of the top broadcasters of recent years. Here he is, Jack DeManio. Welcome to the program, Jack. Have a seat.
Hi, Jack.
Your question, please.
What does the team think is the worst occasion on which to have to make a speech?
What does the team think is the worst occasion on which to have to make a speech?
Well, I was once asked to make a speech at some dinner or the other, and for some reason I was a bit sort
drunk.
Of wicked, I suppose, and I said that I wouldn't. I expect it was because I wasn't offered a fee and they wanted to get a free entertainment. So I said, no, I'm not going to make a speech. And the chairman kept on at me, and I still said, no, I'm not going to make a speech. And he turned to Betty and he said, what do you think of a chap who can make a speech but won't? And she said very tactfully, well, I prefer him to a chap who can't speak but will.
I think the worst occasion you have to make a speech, apart from what Siddle said, which is very trite, I thought that was very good.
Trenchant.
I beg your pardon.
Yes, used to be in charge of the police.
Of course, you're a trencherman, you should know. But when I was not the world celebrity that I am now...
There was never a time.
I was...
Modest little man.
I was announced by a vicar having opened the garden fete. And he said how pleased I was I'd come along, and he said, and now I'm going to ask him to speak to you, you lucky people, Mr. Tommy Trinder.
But you know, we are comedians, and we often get asked to do speeches, and it's not our forte, it's not my scene, really. Open air fates, for example, you know.
Jack DeManio, do you
oh,
have
you've
to...
just brushed me aside, have you? I've just brushed aside.
Well, I thought you were going to start
like
a...
an old boot, yeah.
I thought you were going to start a speech,
no,
Jim.
No, he's got a good gag coming up here.
Has he? Jack, before we return to Jim, do you have to make many speeches?
Well, one's called upon, as we all are here, you know, and I agree with Jim that this awful problem, because we broadcast, we entertain, we're expected to be speechifiers, and I'm not a speechifier. But I remember one particular occasion, I was opening a fete somewhere in Warwickshire, I think it was, and I drove my car along, and I'm very bad at map reading, and eventually I found the village, and I'm very vague, at least I thought I'd found it, and I saw a lot of bunting around the place. And I drove in, and I got out of the car, and I chose the vicar as the man who was likely to be running the show, and I went up and said, good afternoon. He said, good afternoon. I said, my name's Jack de Manier. He said, who? I said, Jack de Manier. He said, oh, yes, how very nice. I said, I come from the BBC, and I've come along to open your fete. Oh, how very kind of you. It was opened half an hour ago.
Oh, dear.
I had to go to another village and find the right one.
You can get into such trouble trying to make a serious speech when you're a comedian. I mean, there are occasions when you have to make a serious speech. I mean, when they made me director of Aberdeen University.
Which I turned down. Well, you're a Mohammedan. You couldn't be, could you?
No, but I had to go up there and make a speech in front of the students, which I was supposed to have some sort of serious content. And I must confess that I fell down on my rectorium.
And that is the reason, Jim. They offered it to me in the Stone Ages, and I thought, no, I'm not going up there and taking a chance. But I think the worst speech I ever had to follow was in 1937, and it was at the Clarendon Hammersmith.
I was 17 at the
time. I was getting 2 guineas for appearing, and a man got up, and there were all the usual speeches, and it was the night of the Duke of Windsor's abdication. So they made the speeches, and at 9:45 or whatever time it was, he said, we will now bring in the wireless, and we'll hear the speech. So the late Duke of Windsor started his speech. All the women were crying their eyes out. Even strong men were piping tears. And the whole thing finished. They listened to the broadcast, and he said, and now, ladies and gentlemen, you are to be entertained by Mr. Arthur Askey. I hadn't got a hope.
Well, Jim, can you recall some of your political speeches?
Ah, mercifully no. I was as big a humbug as all of them. When I stood for Parliament in North Paddington in 1964, I told as many untruths, not untruths, I waffled in a grey suit, just the same as all of them.
Ooh, fancy waffling.
And I always remember one day somebody got up and asked me, you know, they prepare questions for just to floor you. And somebody got up and said, could you tell me of the incidence of some percentage of something or other? And I said, I'm afraid I can't answer that. And of course, the people from central office came and I said, never say that. Never say you can't answer it. Keep talking for 5 minutes and they'll forget what the question was.
Just like this programme, isn't it?
I love those guys who introduce you. These big fellows in the red coat. There was a story some years ago about one of them got up and he said, Your Highnesses, Your Graces, My Lord Mayor, Distinguished Guests, My Lords, Ladies and Gentlemen, the ruddy place is on fire.
Thank you very much, Tim, and thank you, Jack de Manier. Now, team, this question comes to you from Miss Evelyn Fletcher.
If the team were given, during the recording of this programme, 4 minutes' warning of the end of the world, how would they spend this time?
Here we go. If the team were given, during the recording of this programme, 4 minute warning of the end of the world, how would they spend this time?
Stay where you are and I'll show you. I think I'd nip out and have a quick lesson on the harp.
I should ring Betty.
I think I'd nip home and get into some clean underwear.
Cyril, you ring Betty with the phones the way they are, you wouldn't get through in 4 minutes.
No, I wouldn't be afraid of
You'd
that.
You'd be still listening to the boop, boop. I would ask Miss Fletcher what she was doing for 4 minutes.
Oh, well, many things spring to mind, but I think...
Many?
Yes. some of which are unrepeatable. No, I think I would race around to the nearest pub and raid the wine cellar. And
what I was trying to say to you... What I was trying to say, Miss Fletcher, was I was going to ask you what you were doing for the next 4 minutes. I mean, how long would it take you to get that scarf off for a start? No, I reckon...
If you had 4 minutes, I know what you'd do. You'd have a minute to get to the pub, a minute to wait, a minute to order, a minute to drink, and boy, what a hangover.
I would like to tell the very best joke that I've ever told on this programme, and I've not told very many, but I would like to tell the very best joke possible, get an enormous laugh and die happy.
Oh, lovely.
But you see, nothing is certain in this world. You get this four-minute warning and do all these desperate things, and then it doesn't happen.
Well, they say that your life goes before you when you're going to die, and I'd like to leave out the clean bits. It'd be quite nice.
I mean, that happened to me, you know, when I was in a spot of bother once, I forget when it was, and my whole life flashed in front of me. It does when you think you're going to die, and I enjoyed every pint of it.
Now, I should keep on... Being a true professional, if they said there was 4 minutes to go, I should keep on working. I did the same thing in a situation in a theatre. I was doing my act, and there was an alarm of fire, and the audience all panicked, started going for the exit, shouting. I kept on. They all came back, sat down, and they were all burnt to death.
But can you imagine it being announced? You can imagine the announcement in a typically English way. They'd say, here is a special item of news that has just come in. The world will end in 4 minutes' time. Now, here are the football results.
I wouldn't believe it. You know, I wouldn't believe it. I mean, if somebody said to me, the world is going to end in 4 minutes, it's like when a publican says to me, we're going to close in 4 minutes. I don't believe it. And there are ways and means of circumventing it. Ooh, I would say to him, wait a minute. I'm a bona fide traveller, I'd say. And the world cannot stop when you're a bona fide traveller. I'm a resident, I've signed the book, and I'm stopping.
What, in the world, you mean?
Yes, the world wouldn't be allowed to finish if I was a bona fide.
They stop the world and let you get off, don't they, Greg?
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Miss Fletcher. Thank you.
Thank you. Good stopping.
Welcome to the programme, Mr. John Prentice. Let's have your question, please.
In Bournemouth, we have a lady who, when suffering a bad manoeuvre from another motorist, holds up at her car window a card inscribed pig. How would the team react in similar circumstances?
In Bournemouth, says Mr. Prentice, they have a lady who, when suffering a bad manoeuvre from another motorist, holds up at her car window a card inscribed pig. How do the team react in similar circumstances?
I think the thing to do would be to put up another notice saying COW.
Now, may I just have a little ceremony here? Arthur, what do you call, heads or tails?
Tails.
Tails, you tell the pig gag.
No, you tell the pig gag.
Well, it's a fella driving along and a woman's coming the other way.
What was he driving, a motor car?
A motor car.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and this woman shouts at him, pig, pig! And he's very nice, he shouts, cow, back to her, and 2 minutes later he runs over a pig.
I don't know why you bothered to toss up for that.
Why do you think I shelved it?
Even me.
Is that true, though?
Yes.
Is that a woman goes, what a mind she
true.
Must have. Yes. She goes out with a card in her car saying, perhaps it's her shopping list. She may be thinking of something she's going to buy for her husband for the weekend.
Knowing what one does to pig when one cooks it, I would have a card prepared which simply said, get stuffed.
She sounds like the sort of woman who ran somebody over and said to them, can't you get up? And he said, why, do you want to try it again?
I think the most irritable people are the people who blow horns at you. And if they do that to me, I invariably get out, especially if I'm stalled and I can't start the engine. I say to the man, you start my engine, I'll blow your horn.
Do you know, one mustn't be a competitive driver. That's the lesson one learns. I speak seriously, Mr. Catchpenny.
Prentice.
They all have such funny names on this programme. Oh, no, what's she got?
Keep going, love.
It might be a good idea if, when this woman puts this card up with P-I-G on it, you put another card with G-I-P on it, hoping that she'll reverse into a bus.
No, she'll think she's upside down.
I've written a little poem here. It says, a lady from Bournemouth in Hants led drivers a bit of a dance. She don't care the fig, just calls them a pig. She wants a good kick in the pants.
Thank you, and there I'm afraid we must close. Does the team think for today? On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher and Cardi Robinson and our producer Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest Jack DeManio. This is MacDonald Hopley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.